My name's Raz. I'm an addict.
Hey, Raz.
And I'm truly grateful to be in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, man. I want to welcome the newcomer, man. If you're new, welcome. You don't ever have to use again, even if you want to. You know, you don't ever have to feel the way you felt, you know, when you were in the back of that cop car, right? You don't ever have to feel the way you felt when you had your face dug into the palms of your hands, right? Asking yourself, how the fuck did I get here again, you know? Narcotics Anonymous has saved my life, you know. I wanted to read a little bit of out of the literature from The Living Clean. It says, the first bit of hope we experienced in NA came from a place of defeat. Using drugs hadn't worked for us. Our grand experiment of solving our living problems with mind and mood-altering substances was a profound failure. In the dark place, though, a ray of light shone through. We could find a way of addiction, out of addiction and into recovery. Having hope for the good things that will come our way is great. But we would do well to remember how much precious hope can be when we have very little of it. We are bound to experience tremendous disappointments when we stay clean for years and decades. Some will rattle to our very core. We bury parents, children, siblings, and spouses, and lots of fellow addicts. We lose jobs and relationships. We make terrible mistakes and hurt people we love. Guilt, shame, and loneliness take up so much space in the room that it's hard to make any space for hope, even when it's what we most desperately need. You know, man, and I got clean in 2017. I've been here a little bit over 8 years. Relapse is not part of my story. And I thought for a long time my disease wasn't as active as other people's, right? I realized quickly, though, the ends are always the same. You know, and not always in that order. You know, you hear the jails, institutions, and death, man, and some people don't make it to jails or institutions, man. I grew up in a family of alcoholics and drug addicts, right? Alcoholics on my mom's side, drug addicts on my dad's side. No matter where I went, you know, every summer I either went to my mom's family or my dad's family, and there something was there, you know. And naturally, I engaged in the drug use, you know. I had children at an early age because I felt like I needed somebody to be there with me, you know. My dad was in prison all the time, and I had little to no hope at all to like excel in anything, you know. I wasn't good at school. I didn't feel like I could be a part of anything just because I didn't have any kind of support. Nobody was ever around for me. I was the youngest of my siblings. And so I was always the runt, right? Like everybody always, when we played hide and seek or tag, I was always the person seeking or trying to tag my brothers and my cousins, you know, and always being, you know, ran away from, you know, and I say that because that's kind of like where my disease kind of started, right? Feeling like I wasn't adequate enough to kind of fit in with the group of my cousins or my brothers. And so what happened, right, is I carried those defects into my life growing up. At some point, you know, I used, and my consequences caught up with me. I was in a relationship, and you know, my kid's mother at the time, we got into an altercation, and what had happened was I didn't do anything, right? Like my thinking was it was all her fault, and everything that happened was because of her, you know. And at first, right, I started to tell my children, like, man, this is not cool, you know. And then my kids started telling me, why are y'all even fucking together, you know? And that made me feel something, because my mom, you know, grew up where you got to stick with your family. And my dad was in prison all the time, and my mom continued to do everything she could for us. And so that mentality was something that grew with me, you know. It's like it was okay for us to fight as long as I stayed with her, you know, and my kids had their parents, both parents, you know. And I learned real quick, you know, and it was something that hit me in my heart when my kids told me, like, y'all shouldn't be together. You know, like I couldn't see those things, you know, and my kids could see it, you know, and, you know, eventually the consequences of my actions, man, you know, I remember asking God, you know, I got one clean date in Narcotics Anonymous, but that doesn't mean that I didn't try to get clean before, you know, like try to tell myself, fuck, you have to stop. Like, what are you going to do to stop? You know, and I just couldn't. And so when my consequences of my actions finally caught up with me, I ended up in jail. You know, I remember asking God to please help me get clean, you know, or help me stop is what it was. So I didn't know what being clean was at the time. I knew what meetings were. I knew what some kind of recovery was, but it was through the other fellowship because my dad had me sign his paper, you know, when I was a kid. I was 13 years old, man. My dad would ask me to sign his paper, you know. And then he would ask my other brother to sign his paper, you know. And it was just, you know, at the time we had phone books, you know. And so he would open up the phone book and be like, okay, John, you know, okay, you know, whatever, you know. And so I remember that, you know. You know, when I ended up in jail, of course, because of my actions, you know, and one of the things was, man, is I got to tell the fucking truth for the first time, you know. My mom always told me, just tell the truth, you know, and so getting to tell the truth got me in a CPS case, got me locked up, got me in treatment, you know, all the things that I didn't think was going to help me, you know, but all the things that I needed to help me, you know. And so when I went to jail, you know, my dad used to tell me, man, like if when you go to jail, you better be ready to get your ass kicked or kick some ass, you know. And that was like the thought that I had, you know, that was the picture he painted in my head. And it was nothing like that. You know, like when I got there, it was like the class of 2000 and all my friends were there. And, you know, I mean, we had a really good time, you know, and I believe my higher power put that in my life, you know, so that I could actually see what was going on and what I was doing, you know. I got out of jail. I called my lawyer. I said, look, man, I got a little bit of clean time, had some clarity. So I want to do this right. What do I need to do? You need to go to treatment. I said, inpatient or outpatient? And he was like, well, you need to go inpatient. I'm like, well, fuck, man, I just did. And look, I'm going to tell y'all, man, look, I didn't go to jail for a long periods of time, right? Like, these were all a mask, right? All the tattoos are all a mask, right? When I got clean, you know, you know, even when I got clean, man, I didn't know what I was doing. You know, like sometimes I still don't know what I'm doing. You know, but I show up. You know, when I got clean, they told me to go ahead and go to treatment. So I went to treatment, man. And this is kind of like, I don't know if you guys ever seen this commercial. I love to share this story, man, right? Because this commercial came on. And it was like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning when I was using, right? And it was commercial came on, and it was like, do you have a problem with drugs? Do you need help, right? And I remember this commercial, right? And it was like I remember seeing people drinking coffee in the mornings in these robes and swinging on porch swings in the sunrise and all this shit. I was like, well, fuck. You know, like, you need to come to treatment, right? And so that was the picture I had of treatment. And that was like the first hope that I had, right? Like, any hope of getting clean was through that commercial, you know? And so I was like, you know what? I can do this. And I remember my kid's mom telling me, you really fucking going? Like, what am I going to do, you know? because for a long time, you know, like my I was jealous, and I didn't want her to get a job, you know? And so she didn't get a job because I told her, and it's not that I told her I was jealous, of course. You know, I told her, I'm the man of the house, and I'm going to work, and I'm going to do everything for us, right? And it was because I have a jealousy problem, you know? And so I remember what I used to tell her, like, man, when are you going to get a job to help me out, you know? And then she was, oh, yeah, I got a job. And then I was mad because she got a job, you know? But, you know, when I went to treatment, man, there was this guy there, you know. I don't know if you guys know him. He's from the I'm not going to say his name, but he's from the Austin area. And he came in there, right? They told me that if I brought the body, the mind would follow, right? And I didn't know what treatment was, of course. You know, like I said, the only thing I knew about treatment was that I was going to go and I was going to be sitting on the porch and drink coffee in the mornings, right? And so I get there, man, it was fucking nothing like that, man, right? Like, I mean, there was mold and the ceiling was falling through and all this shit, man. But you know, there was an atmosphere of recovery there, you know? And so I engaged in those things, man, because, you know, our literature talks about, like, when we were beaten, we became willing, you know? And I truly believe that I was willing way before I became beaten. You know, like, I knew how to stop. I just couldn't stay there. You know, I couldn't stay stop. And so this guy came in and he started sharing his story, man. And like his story was my story. You know what I mean? You know, they say the literature, you know, was written by addicts for addicts, right? And here I have a guy, you know, in front of me telling my story, you know. You know, it also says that at some point, you know, you hear your story come out of somebody else's mouth, man. That's what was happening. You know, and the reality was is there was 90 other men in that facility who were there on the same thing. You know, they had gotten caught with drugs and they were on the verge of losing their children, just like I was, you know. So, like, if I really come down to think about it, like, everybody was there for the same thing, you know. But, you know, the guy shared about being in recovery. And I don't remember how much time he had there at the time, but, you know, he was tattooed, you know, a Hispanic guy. You know, he looked just like, man, I saw my dad, right? A tattooed Hispanic guy, right? And I was like, well, fuck, you know, if he can do it, like, why couldn't I, you know? And so he shared about how he was on the verge of getting his kids back, how CPS was in his life. Basically, he was, like I said, telling my story. And I want to do that, you know, and I want to go and do that at some point. You know, I want to be standing up there like he is. You know, and today I've had the opportunity to do that. You know, it's an honor and a privilege to be up here. You know, no matter how much fear, you know, it brings to me, how much anxiety it brings to me, man. Like, it's a fucking honor and a privilege to be here. You know, so being somewhere out of my area to come and share a little bit, you know, I'm truly grateful for this program. So I remember it was coming closer, right, to getting out of treatment. And I was scared as fuck, you know. I didn't know what it was going to look like. All I knew was that I was going to go right back to where I was going, you know. And that didn't give me hope at all, you know. Like what I knew was that it was so easy for me to walk across the hallway to go get loaded with my dad and my brother, because that's who I got high with. That's who I was staying with at the time, you know. And it was a lot of fucking insanity, man. It was funny, man. One day I was asleep, right? I was clean already. I'd just come home from treatment, and I was woken up to a loud chop saw, man, in my fucking living room. And I was like, what the fuck is going on, man? And I walk out, and again, my dad and my brothers were all using, man. And I walk out there, and my brother's out there in the living room with a fucking chop saw at 3 o'clock in the morning, man. You know, and it's just like, what the fuck are you doing, man? You know? And he was building the fucking Nightmare on Elm Street fucking house. I don't fucking know, you know? Something fucking crazy, you know? And so, like, the insanity, man, like, it was just crazy, man. Things were starting to look a little different for me, you know, and I was starting to see that, you know, there was a little bit of hope for me, you know, that, you know, even it was just a little mustard seed, you know, things weren't the way they were. You know, I was in the room, and I was actually sleeping on a bed, and I wasn't on the fucking recliner by myself with the only thing in the room getting high, you know. And it was just one of those things, man, that I was able to it was one of those things, man, that I was able to, like identify, you know, that I wasn't doing anymore. And so I remember when I left, right, this guy, you know, and my God's got a way of kind of bringing everything full circle for me, right? You know, and you know, I make sure today, man, that I don't cross over that second step, man, with that minimum of concern, like it says, you know. Like, I have a higher power today that works and orchestrates in my life and shows me that I'm right where I'm supposed to be, you know. And it's funny, man. He's got jokes, you know. He's got a lot of jokes, you know. And my old sponsor, you know, one day I was telling him, man, you know, I remember when I left treatment, the last day I was there, you know, I asked my higher power, man, please help me stay clean. You know, whatever I have to do, I'm willing to do it. Just please help me stay clean. You know, and help me get my family back and my children, because, you know, ultimately that's what started this whole recovery, was my children. You know, I just kept hearing my mom say, you know what, your children need you, you know, and they deserve you and you deserve them. And so when I got clean, I asked my higher power to please help me stay clean. And, you know, I got home and, you know, my kids were being fucking kids, you know, and they were doing fucking dumb shit. You know, and I was getting upset, you know, and you know, this was early in recovery, you know, and my sponsor at the time, he told me, you know, everybody wants their children until they got their fucking children, you know, because now we have to deal with children, right? And we have to deal with them clean, you know, and we get to feel those things that we didn't really give a fuck, you know, of before, you know. You know, I've done this kind of, I work in this line of work where I do audio and video, so I install speakers, cameras, all kinds of stuff, right? And so I had been doing this work for a long time using, you know, and going through these neighborhoods, right, where upscale neighborhoods where these people were, you know, had a lot of money, right, of course. And so I remember watching people, you know, getting high and watching people going through the neighborhoods and wondering, like, why are these fucking people on their hands and knees picking fucking weeds out of their yard, right? Like, they're fucking weeds. That's what they do. They grow and they're fucking obnoxious or whatever. And why do people continue to try to do that? Well, because of me doing what I'm supposed to be doing, right? Staying clean. Like, we bought a house 3 years ago. And I find myself on my fucking knees picking weeds out of my fucking yard, right? And God has given me the gratitude, right? The understanding that today, like, I get to fucking do these things, right? Like, I get to, like, deal with all the problems that grown-ups fucking deal with, right? And it's a fucking amazing, man. You know, I got married here in Narcotics Anonymous, right? I met my wife here in a meeting. Our stories were completely different, you know? And honestly, like, I knew when I was using that if I didn't have a fucking needle in my arm, I was going to be okay. That's what I told myself, right? And I met my wife, who is a recovering heroin addict here, you know? I saw my dad and what my dad did and the things that my dad did, and I knew that, like, I didn't ever want to deal with people who were doing that kind of drugs, you know. But God had other plans for me, you know. My wife is the best thing that's ever happened to me, man. You know, it's you know, I used to tell myself, I don't see how people can get into a relationship here and one's in recovery and the other one isn't, you know. And some people think that that's the best way to do it, you know. And I just didn't understand that. And now in recovery, I don't understand, you know, sometimes I don't understand how two people who have strong-willed minded, right, can have differences of opinion sometimes and still make it, you know, and it's a tough thing to do. But it's been a blessing in my life, you know. I remember asking, you know, my higher power to please, you know, give me my children back. And, you know, God gave me bonus kids today, you know. I had so many things going on just recently in my life, you know. My son just got married. So I have, and I'm going to fuck this up because I do all the time. Billy, please don't tell my wife, okay? I have a son that's in Okinawa. He's in the Marines. He's fixing to come home. I have a son who just got married. He's 20 years old. He just got married, okay? my son's coming home. He's 20 years old. My daughter, my oldest daughter, she just had a baby. I'm newly a grandpa again for the second time. I just found out that my son, of course, is going to have a baby. I don't know if I said he just had a baby. I really meant that his wife is pregnant. And I just found out that I'm going to be a grandpa again. You know, like, God has given me more, you know, more than I thought at the time that I wanted, right? But, you know, it's a blessing, man. You know, I don't like to wear the grandpa jacket, right? But I love to hear my kids say, hey, grandpa, grandpa, you know, like my youngest daughter, when I said it earlier about her having to, you know, we went to CPS, I always say that CPS took my kids, right? But, you know, in reality, man, I gave my kids away. You know, I kept doing the shit that I wasn't supposed to be doing. And as a result, my kids got taken away. And, you know, my youngest daughter has never seen me use. You know, I was actually talking to a buddy of mine, man, this morning, man. And I was showing him, you know, we FaceTimed my daughter. She's 9 years old. She still has my orange key tag. You know, she came to visit me when I was in treatment, right? And I gave her my very first orange key tag. This is 8 years ago, right? And she still has it in her room hanging. And that's a fucking blessing for me, you know? I hope and pray to my God that she never sees me high, you know? But all I have is just for today, you know? This is an all-day, every-day, just-for-today program. You know, and I live this program as best as I can, to the best of my ability. You know, I've learned to love and be loved here. You know, I realized early in recovery that I had been looking for love in all the wrong places, right? You know, when I first got here, it took me 5 years, man, for me to start working any kind of program. You know, it's like steps, you know. You know, I stayed high. I mean, I stayed clean, but was still living dirty. You know, doing shit that still wasn't in alignment with what recovery, you know, teaches us here. You know, 13 stepping, right? Doing, you know, being in a meeting with like four other women, right? That I was, you know, hanging out with at one point, man. And it's fucking uncomfortable. You know, it's fucking uncomfortable. I'm happy to say, man, that today, you know, I've gone from 13 stepping, man, to ultimate fucking weapon today. You know, I'm here to stay fucking clean. You know, and I don't know what that looks like sometimes, but I know that as long as that I keep following the suggestions that are given to me here, I got a really good chance of staying clean for the rest of the day and hopefully tomorrow. You know, if nobody's told you guys that they love you, I love you guys, man. Thanks for letting me share. Go help somebody.
Joe W.
Hey, Joe.
I'm an addict. My clean date is June 13th of 2017. It's not the day I actually quit using. It's the day I picked that I knew I was clean because I couldn't remember when I quit using. And I don't know if I can be as hopeful as right. And I don't know that my message is going to be so good and godly. A friend in my support group strongly suggested that I speak here today. I've never spoke at a convention before or a workshop or whatever the hell this is. But I was raised in recovery that when recovery asks you to serve, if you're grateful for your clean time, you will serve. So I'm here against my better judgment. I argued with Herschel when he told me the message was hope. I said, I am not a hopeful person. I prefer to be grumpy, mean, bitchy, with tendencies of violence. I'm not real godly. I don't do it. I told him he needed a Jesus person. I'm not a Jesus person. But he swore to God that I would be good at this. So I'm here. Anyway, on June 13th of 2017, I did not come to Narcotics Anonymous because I thought I was a drug addict. I came to Narcotics Anonymous because I needed a 12-step program to save my sorry ass. Because I had 25 years in another 12-step program, and I couldn't get it right. I could get long-term clean time. I got 8 years the first time, went out for a day with a bottle of tequila. I got 6 years the second time, went out for a week with another bottle of tequila. And then the third time I went out, I said, fuck it, I'm going to drink myself to death. I stayed out 3 years, and consequences caught up with me. And I got clean because I had prior recovery, and I knew the consequences were bad. And when the consequences get bad, people in recovery get clean. But I wasn't going back to where I've been, because it didn't fucking work, man. I swear to God, I gave it my best fucking shot. You know, I talk to God every day, you know, all throughout the day. I worked steps like a fucking banshee. I had the literature memorized, could quote it for verbatim. You know, fucking meetings and retreats and fucking picnics and campouts. I fucking did it all, man. But when my ass got in a crack and my head got to spinning and my bipolar kicked up and my PTSD kicked in, I didn't give a flying fuck. I just said, fuck it, I'm done. I need relief. This shit ain't working. I didn't hesitate. I did not stop going to meetings. I didn't stop hanging out. Matter of fact, on my first relapse, I'd show up at meetings. And people would be like, man, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I'm drinking. No, you ain't drinking. Not you. You fucking kidding me? By the end of the week, they're like, oh, my God, you are fucking drinking. I was like, I fucking told you I was drinking. They didn't believe me because my message was so strong, because my recovery was so strong. They just couldn't fucking believe that I went out. But there I was, dying in front of them, and a newcomer got up in my face. You can't come in here fucking drunk. I fucking look up to you. Shamed me right out of the fucking room. And I went home. I put the bottle down and I come back. You know? Second time I went out, it was either I was going to kill this motherfucker. And I was going to his house. I had a plan. I had my black clothes. I had a trail through the woods. I had diesel fuel in my car. I was going to burn him down in his motherfucking house. And for some reason, when I got down his road, I took a right and I ended up in the liquor store. And I bought a bottle of Mezcal. And a $50 bottle of this Sammy Hagar fucking tequila. I don't know what it was. It was horrible, really. One worth 50 bucks, but I drank it. So it was like killer. You know, and people told me when I came back a week later, they were like, you made the right decision. You know, because we can sober you back up, but we can't get you out of prison for murder. You know? And it was weird, too, because I kept thinking, how am I going to make amends for this? Like, on my way driving to his house to burn him up in his house, I'm thinking, how am I going to make amends for this? I ended up at the liquor store. You know, my third go out, my psychiatrist put me on benzos. And I didn't know what benzos were. He just gave me these fucking pills, and he said, take these. They'll help you. Whenever you get nervous, just take one. By the end of the week, I was doing 5-6 a day. I didn't know. You know, I didn't know. I didn't know what I was doing, but I know they were helping me. You know, I was drunk. I was drunk. I picked up that bottle of tequila. I did not hesitate. 3 years I spent out there. Every day, I can't drink no more, I can't drug no more, I get sick, I puke, I pass out, I fall down. I can't, it doesn't, like, my body won't even process it anymore because I've used so much through my life. I was a daily user. I used every day, all day. It's the way I like to roll. It's just the way I roll. My body was give out. When I come in at 25, I was dying of malnutrition. I didn't want to get clean. I didn't want to quit partying, but my doctor told me I was dying. I remember coming in here and people telling me this is for people who need it or who want it, not need it. And I'm like, motherfucker, I need it. I'm dying. You know? So anyway, I came to Narcotics Anonymous. I was indifferent. And I was intolerant of spiritual principles. I had tried 12-step recovery, and it left me wanting. I felt forsaken by God. I was completely satisfied with drinking myself to death, going on to the bitter end. I was completely okay with that, totally resolved with that, until the day my daughter told me to get the fuck out. And I knew that day, the only thing I could do to make things right was to quit using. And I knew I didn't want to quit using. I knew I didn't know how to quit using. I knew it had me, and it had me for a while. I remember waking up in the morning and being angry that I was alive, that I had to do it one more motherfucking day. You know? So I got clean. I came to Narcotics Anonymous, and the first meeting I went to, I was so depressed, suicidal, homicidal. I walked in, this good-looking guy's eyeballing me. I'm eyeballing him back. Who's going to drop eyes first? He didn't drop eyes. Neither did I. I walked right up on him. I was like, what the fuck are you looking at? He's like, I know you. I'm like, motherfucker, you don't know me. You don't know me for shit. And I went and took a seat in the back row, in the back corner, where I belong. It took a while, man. I was suicidal and homicidal for 6 months. I wanted to use every fucking day. And I just kept showing up. Last one in, first one out. And I knew, because I had done recovery before. If you just keep coming back, it'll get better. Just keep coming back. And I did. The whole time I'm going to my psychiatrist going, I need more. And I went from 20 milligrams of whatever the fuck they were giving me to 120 milligrams of whatever the fuck they were giving me. I was so over-medicated. I didn't think. I didn't feel. I didn't know shit. My first 4 years of recovery, I just showed up. I picked me a home group. I just kept showing up. People would invite me out to eat. And I just kept showing up. 4 fucking years. Just over-medicated, numb, didn't give a fuck, and thought I was doing great because I wasn't using. You know? My daughter kicked me out of the house. She couldn't take it. She couldn't take me being depressed, sitting around, watching Fox News 24/7, not bathing, not cleaning, not helping. I was more and more depressed the longer I stayed clean. She kicked me out. I went to my new doctor and I said, I think I'm over-medicated. They started weaning me off that shit. And I rolled into Houston 3 years ago, 2 blocks from the Phoenix Club. Phoenix Club is my home group, meets twice a week. We have literature meetings only. That group has saved my motherfucking life. It has changed my whole world because they carry the message of Narcotics Anonymous the way it's written in the text. I did not know what an addict was. I was bound by stereotypes in my mind of prostitutes and junkies and criminals and I just didn't know in my head what disease I was fighting. I didn't know that the self-destruction that I crave was part of my disease. I didn't know that my negative self-criticism, self-hatred, self-loathing, I didn't know that was part of my disease. I didn't know my indifference for human beings, not giving a fuck about anybody, not good, not bad, just did not give a fuck, was part of my disease. My home group educated me on what was wrong with me. And I came to believe it 5 years clean that I was an addict. I remember reading the basic text when I first got here, because I'm a book person. And I didn't give a shit about their God, and I didn't give a shit about their steps, because I had done all of that, and I ended up fucked up any damn way. But when I read that basic text, what I heard was suffering, pain, mental torment, emotional anguish, suicide, homicide, the things that I have inside me, the demons that I fight on a daily basis. I remember reading a story about a guy who had schizophrenia, had substantial clean time, got sick with his mental illness, and damn near lost his recovery. When I read that story, I thought to myself, I am not schizophrenic. I have worked in mental institutions. I have seen schizophrenia up close and motherfucking personal. It is ugly. I was like, if this son of a bitch can stay clean through a schizophrenic episode, how come I can't stay clean through PTSD and bipolar? What makes him so much different than me? And I got curious. And I came back. When I picked my sponsor, she has 32 years in recovery. I picked her because she had 32 years in recovery. That's what I would have had I stayed clean. Now, my sponsor knows something I don't know. She knows how to stay clean on the hard days. She knows how to stay clean when the shit hits the fan. When she don't give a fuck, she knows how to stay clean. When I worked steps with her, I thought I was a step working motherfucker. I took her my second step, and she made me redo it. She says, you got to go back and do that thing again. She says, where are the people? I said, what people? She said, the addicts. I said, man, you can't trust a fucking addict. We're all fucked up. We're all deviant. You know, social derelicts, afflicted. No, you go back and work that step again. And I realized that every time I relapsed, I locked myself in a room with that PTSD and that bipolar, and I waited for that shit to pass. Like doing bad dope, you know? You just gotta wait it out. You just got to ride it out. And I didn't make it. I didn't make it alone. I didn't make it on my own. I didn't reach out. I didn't ask people to help. I'd check myself into a mental institution. I'd get more drugs. But I wouldn't reach out to the addict. So I've been working on that for 3 years now. And it's hard. When I started collecting phone numbers and making phone contacts, I pissed three personalities off super quick. And of course, that told me that, see there, them motherfuckers ain't worth messing with. They're fucking deviant. They're a problem. I just kept on coming back. Kept on trying more. You know, I did my inventory. I didn't think I'd have anything to put in my inventory. When I took a look at my relationships, I saw how my indifference made me not communicate honestly and authentically with other people about what I was thinking and what I was feeling, and how it caused problems in my relationships because I don't communicate with people, because I refuse to be vulnerable with people, because I refuse to let people in. It creates problems with people who love you when you treat them that way. I didn't know that. When I got to my fifth step, I had to find the willingness and the nature of my wrongs to do different, and I was not willing. But I did become curious. I thought to myself at the age of 60 years old, what if I did it different? What if I had intimate relationships with the people that I love? Just start there, you know? Just start there with the family, the kids, the grandkids, you know? What if it changes everything? So here I am facing to go into 6 and 7, and I know because I've worked steps before, 6 and 7 is where the magic happens. That's where the rubber meets the road. That's where you shit or get off the fucking pot. That's where we get humility. Having a clear vision of who and what the hell we are and why we are what we are. And getting honest about it. taking responsibility for it, looking for solutions. Well, I'm crystal clear. I ain't got no solutions for 6 and 7. My relationship with God is so damaged from my 3-year relapse. I do not have the belief. I do not have the faith. And I have very little hope that I could take anything to God and that He would remove a motherfucking thing from me. So I know I need a bigger God to do 6 and 7. So I'm kind of like in a funny spot. So I've been reading Buddhism lately. Now I'm a Christian from way fucking back. I am. I was born Judean motherfucking Christian, been slam dunked in holy water 100 motherfucking times. You know, because I'm a sinner and I go back all the time. Anyway, because I am looking for a spiritual solution to a spiritual problem, and I know that I don't have it. I know that I have to enlarge my spiritual ground to come face to face with my disease and combat it. My home group has taught me in the last year, it has taught me discipline. It has taught me to do it anyway. Set aside my feelings, set aside my thoughts, and walk towards the right thing. Walk through my insecurities, walk through my negative thinking, act my way into better living. And it has changed my life monumentally. It says in step 3, if you're doing it right, if you're doing step 3 correctly, you have made a commitment to your emotional, mental, and spiritual self. They did not tell me that in the other program. They told me to think carefully before I took this step. Like a 4 fucking warning. Like God was going to turn me into some goody fucking pansy ass 2-shoes. And I was like, I ain't doing it. You can't make me. Oh, you just got to crack the door open a little bit, they said. Nobody said anything about a commitment. Nobody said anything about making decisions for my spiritual well-being, for my emotional well-being, for my mental well-being. Nobody said anything about making better decisions. And they told me I have to make better decisions for my life, for my well-being, for who I am. It changed my life. I went back to paramedic school. I got recertified. I'm back in the career that I love, that I lost 10 years ago because of my mental illness, because I made a decision in my newfound recovery that my mental illness will not define me. I will take responsibility for my mental illness. I will take responsibility for my physical well-being. I will take responsibility for my mental well-being, because when I don't, I create my own problems. And guess what? I self-destruct. Why? Because I'm an addict. Not because I shoot IV drugs or not because I prostitute my body. Because I'm an addict. Because the disease that lives in my soul and my mind and my emotion fucks with me every day. And I have to make decisions regardless of what I feel, regardless of what I think, to do something different. That's all I got. Oh, sit down.